So you're with the Resistance?
Hello, what have we here?
I'm a big deal in the Resistance.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Resistance Radio. It's episode 21. Hope you all enjoyed last week's show, because this week, it's all about Han Solo. As always, I'm Mikey B, joined by my co-host, Danya.
Hello.
And we're also having Jen on the show today. Hey, Jen.
Hello.
As always, if you want to get involved in the conversation, you can get a hold of us on Twitter at @RRadioPodcast, leave a comment on our Facebook, or send us an email through our website, resistanceradio.net. As always, you can leave a comment on this post when it goes up on hypeable.com. So, welcome back, everybody.
Good to be back, as always.
As always.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, Jen, thanks for coming on. Before we get into asking Jen about how she loves Star Wars, like we ask every new person on our show, I do want to mention that our website has been updated with our web store.
Woo!
So last week I said it wasn't quite up yet. We did release it in between releasing the episode and getting the store up to date. So now you can buy t-shirts and buttons from our website, and then I will get those shipped out as quick as I possibly can to everyone who orders.
And the t-shirts are awesome and really comfortable, and I've got the buttons on my Star Wars lanyard, which I am going to be wearing to Celebration this weekend.
There you go. Yeah, my buttons are actually, I put all my little round buttons in my car, like on the visor type thing. So I stick them up there and I go, hey, get to see my buttons every time I pull it down. So not just Star Wars buttons, other buttons
too. That's a unique place to put buttons.
Well,
like, I've never heard of anyone doing that before. That's a bit different, Mikey.
Well, all right. So you gotta understand, I came from LA, you know, born and raised in Southern California. So I always had to use the sun visor, like, all the time. And I had a couple, you know, satchel bags that the strap was completely covered with buttons, from bands to movies to all sorts of goofy things. And I literally just ran out of spots to start putting these buttons. So, like, in my car, I'm like, you know, because you gotta understand, like, that always flipped down and stuff like that for me, because I'm driving, you know, in LA, you drove everywhere, and I used to drive 2 hours to and from work every day. So, it was one of those things where I'm like, I could totally put buttons here, and, like, look up and be smile, and, you know, hey, I got a cool little button here. So, I started putting buttons in my car. I don't know. It's a spot. I can put them. They fit there. They work for me. I like it. Anyway, moving on.
Yeah, I was gonna talk about buttons some more, but I think maybe... Probably not.
You know, I found out they don't work on stormtrooper armor. They just that armor's just a little too tough. So I guess it does block buttons, though. Maybe not blaster bolts, but buttons. See, learn something every day, right?
Yeah, you're not going to stick them with the pin, so.
Yeah. Anyway, moving on. Jen, so this is your first time on Resistance Radio. Thank you for coming on, by the way. Tell us a little bit about
your background
with Star Wars. How'd you get into it?
So, I think mine is probably going to be different from most, because I think I was a Star Wars fan from birth, because my dad was super into it. Like, super into it.
That's
so
awesome.
He queued up for the premiere when he was a kid, and, like, was way into it, and... For his background, he was the president of the National Association of Rocketry for a really long time, and that's the largest group of model rocketeers in the United States and arguably internationally. And they actually have a classification where if you win certain competitions, you're called a Jedi Master, and my dad is a Jedi Master. So I grew up with a lot of Star Wars.
That's
I don't
kind
even
of
remember
awesome.
The first time. Yeah, it's really nerdy. I don't even remember the first time I saw the original trilogy, but I remember always wanting to be a Jedi and always wanting to be Luke or Han or Leia, and just probably being way more into it than most, like, small children should be.
You know, that's very similar to mine. My mom actually queued up to see it when it was first released at the Grauman's in LA, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And I grew up with a big love for Star Wars, probably more than I should have. Like, I've said it multiple mm-hmm. times, I had Luke Skywalker as an imaginary friend growing up. I was a lonely kid until I had a brother. But anyway, moving on from there. Well, welcome, and thank you for sharing that with us. I love hearing
You're
how
welcome.
Different people got into Star Wars. So we do have some mm-hmm. news this week. Not a lot of news. I think they're kind of waiting till this weekend when this obviously posts, but they'll be waiting for it to tell us about everything at Celebration 3. And luckily, we have someone on the ground tweeting about it, right, Danya?
Ooh, yes. I'm very, very, very excited to be going. It's like less than a day now. I'll already be at Cantina this time tomorrow, which they actually, funnily enough, they announced their secret headliner, which I'd already worked out. But if anyone played the game Republic Commando, the secret band, secret headliner band at Cantina is going to be Ash, who were the guys that did the music for Republic Commando. So they are going to be performing at Cantina, which happens tomorrow at the O2 Arena. There's like little venues around the O2 Arena, and they're in one of those. So it's going to be so good. They are amazing live. I'm really looking forward to it.
And for those of you listening to this on Sunday, tomorrow is actually Thursday, July, 14th?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Just want to make sure, because, you know, you said tomorrow, and I'm like,
yeah, I always forget that we release it on a Sunday, but we record it on a Wednesday, so...
Yeah, just I like to use actual dates. People don't get confused. But yeah, no, that should be really fun. Pictures, yeah. Post pictures, you know, it'll be fun to see.
Oh, trust me, I will.
Moving on to our first bit of news. This is a little bit of spoilers. So if you want to skip ahead maybe 3-5 minutes from this, we don't have a lot to say about this because it's about Star Wars Aftermath Life Debt, the book that was just released yesterday, Tuesday, July 12th. I haven't had a chance to read it yet. I have it for my Kindle. I'm assuming you got it too, Danya.
Yes, I've got it. It's sitting on my iPad right now, and it's waiting for me to read it, but I just need to find the time to read it. I've got other things that I need to read first, or finish reading first. It's, being addicted to books is a terrible but awesome thing.
And comics? Isn't there a Poe comic that came out a while ago?
Yes. Yeah, that's on issue 4 now. Oh my god, the cover for issue 4 is the best thing as well, because it's just
anyway, it's going around. Too far into something else, but yeah, so this next section is going to be a little spoilerish. It kind of covers up, interesting, because like I really didn't know what Life Debt was going to be about at all. I don't know if any of you had really, you know, most of you know my opinions about Aftermath. I was a little disappointed. I was super excited before it came out, and then after reading it, and just maybe I just didn't get into the style of the writing. I do like the characters that were in the book and everything. It was hard for me to get through. So Life Debt, I wasn't like really, really excited to read or waiting for. Not anywhere near of what I would say, you know, Bloodlines was. Whereas like Bloodlines, I was like, I can't wait till this comes out. It's already, you know, pre-order, waiting to download, and midnight started downloading, started to read it right away. But Life Debt, you know, I haven't started yet, but there's a lot of interesting things that have started to creep out about this book. In Life Debt, we learn a little bit more about General Hux, his backstory, which is pretty cool. I'm not going to go into too much detail because it is kind of spoilerish. But we do learn a little bit about General Hux. There's another excerpt that was out there that they talk about how Princess Leia, or General Leia, uses the Force to reach out to Ben while in the womb. So in this book, you know, it takes place right after the Battle of Endor, and at the same time, Han and Leia were married right after the Battle of Endor, so we find that out.
That makes me so happy.
Yeah, like, it totally makes sense. Like, it's like a, you know, the V-Day type, you know, everyone getting married, baby boomers, so I would say maybe Ben's like one of those baby boomers in that Star Wars galactic era. can you imagine it? Like, he's just one of many people. Maz is also featured in this book, which is probably the thing I'm probably most excited about. To learn about Maz a little bit. But just like those things, there's also one other thing that Danya wants to bring up, and I think it's just like the coolest thing ever, and also, but that's a lot of stuff for one book to be covering. You know, to cover stuff about Maz in this book, she's featured Luke and Leia getting married, Leia using the Force, just exploring that concept.
Wait, did you just say Luke and Leia getting married? Because I'm pretty sure that's not
it. I did say it. Han and Leia. Alright, you know what? Danya, you know I'm heavily medicated right now, okay? I'm getting over a sinus infection. I'm on meds. Just whatever. Yes.
Antibiotics should not make you.
That's not the only thing I want. I'm on all sorts of weird things. I got a shot in the butt yesterday. I've never had to get shot in the butt. It was weird.
Ugh. I had to have one of those for a strep infection.
Yeah, not fun.
A long time ago.
Yeah, not fun. I'm like, okay, sure. Anyway, but yeah, so there's lots of different things that covers. Han and Leia get married right after, not Luke and Leia. That would just be weird. Thank you.
This isn't Game of Thrones.
It's not Game of Thrones. Not quite there yet.
And they don't get married either.
Nope, not at all. So the last bit from this book that we found out is there's an excerpt where they talk about a droid that is described to be very similar to a BB unit. Instead of the round dome, it's got a square boxy head that he's given to a soldier who lost a leg at the Battle of Endor. And they use this droid to help treat PTSD, if you will. This character is vehement that he does not want a droid. He vehemently is like, no, I don't really need a droid. And the doctor tells him, well, he doesn't have to have a droid. He can have a therapy Ewok instead.
Okay, but I want to pause for a second, right? Because if we're thinking about therapy Ewok in the same sense that people think about therapy dogs, right? Is that the kind of usage that they're talking about? Because yeah. Isn't that kind of insulting to Ewoks? Because they're their own culture.
Yeah.
It's not some non-sentient, you know, jub-jubbing teddy bear. It's like
I'd be okay with my Ewok. I'd be okay with my Ewok singing "Yub Nub" to me nightly to get me to go to bed and feel better.
Are they getting compensated for this, or is this like slavery?
So again, I have not read the whole book, so I have the excerpt here. I have the excerpt here, and it says, "I could put you with a therapy Ewok set instead. Some of the native Endor creatures have agreed to travel off-world to help veterans like you recuperate as a matter of recompense for saving their home." So they're saying, hey, we'll help you. I'm assuming they'll be more like a servant type character,
maybe a therapist.
Well, yeah, it's like some of the native creatures have agreed to travel off-world to help veterans like you recuperate. When it says like help veterans like you recuperate, I don't know if it's completely PTSD, but I kind of feel like that's what you're getting at, because the droid, the prototype therapy droid that they have is called QT9. So you're like, okay, it's a cute little droid. And, you know, obviously BB-8 is super cute looking and all that. So I can see...
Could it be QT314?
I don't know. It's QT9 is what they call it. And hold on, my cat.
Yeah, mine, I will warn you, my cat Milo is sitting down right behind me, and he's ruined a podcast already with me and Danya. So
you say ruined, I say added more atmosphere.
Yeah. You know,
he has a very unique and loud purr.
Yeah, my cat the cat that walked by doesn't actually purr. She purrs, but you can barely hear it. It's like super high pitch. At least I just can't hear it. But yeah, so I don't know. I don't feel like it's going to be like a dog. But maybe it is just companionship to help recuperate.
From that quote, I think it sounds more like an actual
carer
person. Yeah,
like
exactly.
A carer who to help you out.
At home carer kind of thing is what it sounds like. But I'm also thinking, how often do they have to be reminded, no, you can't eat your patient?
That's true, because they didn't want to eat Han, Chewie, Luke, all of them, right?
They know better now.
Maybe, because they did save their plan. They're like, hey, you guys did a good job. But at the same time, like, you also have to remember the last bit of this line, which I haven't read, is, oh yeah, I don't want one of those. They smell horrible. Like,
rude.
Yeah, you think about it. They're Ewoks. Like, we never really saw plumbing in those trees, so I can only imagine kind of how they smell and everything, and just, you know, I don't know. I wouldn't want to Ewok either. But there are therapy Ewoks. Very different than the story of the caravan. What was the Ewok movie? Caravan of Courage.
Yeah.
So, very different after story, if you will.
Can we talk for a second about General Hux's first name?
Yes.
We can.
Armitage Hux. That's his name. I can't believe it.
It's a very very militaristic.
Well, his father's name is Brendel. Armitage is the son of Brendel. Like, it doesn't, you know, it fits. Yeah. Like, I don't know. I feel like it fits.
It does, but it's kind of like they very much had, like, a path in mind for him when he was born, clearly. Yikes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yikes. Well, but it's an interesting name, you know.
I wonder if
just call him Hux from permanently.
I wonder if use it in the movies. Like,
well, but who's going to be calling him Armitage?
I don't know.
Because it's not going to be Kylo Ren.
Well, unless he's going to say it mockingly or something.
No, I don't think. Because think about it, they never use Palpatine's first name in the films.
That's true. And
that's a pretty bad first name. Shreve. Shreve Palpatine. I don't know. I don't know. Some of these names, you know. Obviously, it's in a galaxy far, far away, taking place a long, long time ago. But, you know, Armitage is not a name I would wish on any kid. That's right, Mr. Hux.
Unless
I
you
like it.
Really?
Really.
All
I
right.
guess it's appropriate for the illegitimate son of an imperial officer.
So. Right, and that's my other question then, is who named him? Did his mom name him? Because, like, if he's illegitimate, obviously his dad's not going to be stomping in there and be like, give him a name.
Unless she was just as, like...
That's true.
Crazy about, like, the Empire and the First Order and taking over the galaxy. You would imagine she might be if she kind of was with an Imperial officer at one point.
Yeah.
Maybe. Well, we don't know the situation.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was going to say. We don't know the situation surrounding
it. Oh, no, no. Like, this is going to start going to a very dark place, so we're going to want to move on very quickly. Well,
before we go too far, apparently Armitage is a village in the UK, and Armitage 3 was a sci-fi TV show that had one season in 1995. So I decided to do a little Google foo and figure out if there's anything else linking to this, and... That's all I can get. It's a village in UK, which I'm wondering if, like, they're like, oh, I wonder if the actor is from that village. Nah, it's too much of a coincidence.
Domhnall Gleeson? No.
No. Anyway, no. moving on. So Life Debt, obviously, there's lots of really great information you're going to find out. I'll give you my review in 2 weeks' time. It may take me that long to read it, because, like I said, the first one was... It was just difficult to read. I think it was the writing style more than anything. Like, because it was a good story.
You're not a fan of Chuck Wendig?
I don't know. I just didn't like... Maybe I haven't experienced a lot of Chuck Wendig, but, like, Aftermath was just really difficult for me to get through.
Aftermath read, like, the first draft of a book.
And months after the book came out, they said they rushed the book out, which... It almost feels like it was a first draft and they just released it because they wanted to time it before The Force Awakens. You know, to give you an idea, like the first book, Star Wars Aftermath, was part of the path to Force Awakens. So it was like the very first book to be released before The Force Awakens, and it kind of got you into it. It takes place right after Return of the Jedi. So like I was super excited to read it, and it took me a ridiculously long time to get through. So much so that since it was the first one to read, it took me probably 2.5 weeks to get through it, and I almost didn't want to pick up the next book, which was Lost Stars. And Lost Stars I read in a day and a half, like just to put it in perspective. And then, like, what is it, Before the Awakening came out, I finished that in a day. Like, so it's like all the other books after it just kind of made me go like, Aftermath. Not as, like, I liked it well enough at the time, but, like... It doesn't make me want to jump into Life Debt. This information I'm finding out about it makes me excited about it, but at the same time, I'm like, I hope I just don't end up hating it.
Yeah, I guess it all depends on how this information is packaged, because the information is very interesting. Like, there was some stuff that came out of Aftermath that was equally as interesting, just the packaging of it was not so great. So I'm a little worried that all of this information is great, it's fantastic, but is the book any good?
Yeah. Oh, well, we'll find out. We'll have to find out. So we also have some new stuff coming up at Disneyland and Disney World. Disneyland has posted a picture, a wonderful new picture of what Star Wars Land is going to look like.
Yay!
Yeah, no, you like it?
Yes,
yes, I want to go to there.
I want to go.
It looks pretty
awesome.
I want to
go right now.
And the really cool part about it is obviously this picture that they released, the concept art, is actually going to be posted in Disneyland along the wall. That's blocked off. So just so you guys know, if those of you who've never been to Disneyland or Disney World when they're actually doing construction, again, growing up in Southern California, I went to Disneyland probably way too often. But one of the cool things is they put up these great big walls, because especially Disneyland more so than Disney World, because Disneyland is kind of literally dead smack in the middle of Anaheim. They have everything, like these big trees. Everything is meant that once you get into the park, you cannot see the outside world. You're in this fantasy land, right? You're in Disneyland, right? So that's where you're at. So you can't see anything. So when they're doing construction, they do the same thing. They make these really big, massive walls, sometimes bigger than others, just depending on what they're actually building, to kind of block you from seeing everything. Well, they're going to be putting these big walls on the edge of the rivers of America and other places where you would be walking to go ahead and... that where the new park's going to be, where the new land is going to be. And they're going to have this mural, this concept art painted on that. So everyone's going to know exactly what it is. Usually they put like Mickey and Minnie and some of the different things. You know, I was at Disney World when the Beast Castle was being built and they're going to do the Beauty and the Beast thing. And they had pictures of, you know, from Beauty and the Beast on it saying, you know, coming soon. But I'm just super excited to see this beautiful, beautiful concept art being painted that big. I'll have to visit again before it's done, obviously.
Oh my god!
I will say there's one thing I don't like about it.
Oh, what is it?
It's got the original radar dish on the Millennium Falcon.
That is true. It does have the original radar dish on it. It's got the circle versus the rectangle. But you know, I'm okay with it here in that concept art. I don't know if it'll make it that way. Yeah, you know, we'll see. We'll see what they do.
Well, because they've got a T-70 up in the front, the X-wing.
Yeah, it's a T-70, not a T-65, you know, so it's definitely
something...
So
you would think it would have the square radar dish, just to be consistent on the timeline.
Yeah, well, but you got to remember, when did that square radar dish get put on? That got put on sometime in between...
I see what you're saying.
So you can say maybe this is right before Han Solo lost the Millennium Falcon. He still had his radar dish. Maybe someone else put the square one on. You know, put the compressor on. So, you know, who knows? But yeah, I do agree. Like, I would like them to kind of just make it a simple time. Also, like, I don't know if you guys noticed the... if you guys look at the concept art and you look at the building types, that dome top and everything, it's very reminiscent of Naboo to me. Like all the buildings and stuff, like the way they kind of look.
I don't think that looks like Naboo.
No.
Really? The domes? No?
No, it's not.
Well,
no,
I don't think it's Naboo by any means, but the architecture reminds me a little bit of the architecture they did for Naboo.
I feel like I've seen those kind of domes before, though, in the original trilogy.
Yeah, that was in Naboo. Here. I'm linking pictures right now.
It also, if you look up Jabba's palace, it looks like the roof structure is there too, or like on Cloud City.
But Cloud City was more of the, I guess maybe Jabba's palace, but Jabba's palace had like the tiered, more like I'm pulling that up right now, whereas these are...
Yeah, but the ones over top of the Millennium Falcon look tiered.
That's very true. They do.
I'm zoomed all the way in.
I'm not getting like... Naboo.
I'm not getting Naboo. It looks too scruffy for Naboo.
No, it definitely feels like it definitely feels scruffy. Like, don't get me wrong, like it feels way more scruffier than, you know, than what we saw in Naboo. You know, everything in the prequels was like super, you know, clean and super pretty, right? But let me just drop these two videos. I might have to actually post these pictures so people can see what I'm talking about directly with it. Cuz this right here, these two,
I'm now Googling Star Wars architecture, just so you know.
That's absolutely fine. I like it. And I have two.
Okay, I now see what you're saying, because I just pulled up a picture of the Royal Palace. But
yeah,
these
like,
have like...
I don't know. The first photo I just posted right now, it's got the water around it, the trees. You know, I feel like
it... Where did
you post
it? Yeah, well, Skype. Wait to Skype chat, of course.
Of course, where we're all at. But, you know, it's... I don't know.
There we go.
It kind of feels like it to me.
I mean, yeah. Kind of. I still think it looks too messy for it, but it's definitely the right coloring. Because Naboo's all that kind of patinaed copper.
Yeah, and so here's the thing. It's like, at the same time, like, even if it's not Naboo, who knows? Maybe the architecture that built this smuggler's haven or wherever we're going to be at this outpost was Nabooian, you know? He was from Naboo.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that they're not, you know, it's not something else. But architecture-wise, and then like, see, and that's the problem that really gets with me. It's like, as I'm looking at it, see, now I'm over-analyzing this. Like, the main part of it, like, makes me feel like Naboo architecture. And then if you go to the far right corner, it gets a little bit more angular and stuff like we saw in Return of the Jedi.
Well,
and
you see, you know, like, what? Maybe it's supposed to be transitioning through all of it.
Maybe. Yeah.
But I'm see, more like, interested in all of these colorful canopies that are hanging over it. Because that kind of reminds me of Jakku, where Rey is sitting underneath that covered awning.
Yeah, and the color is very much like the flags at Maz's palace and stuff.
On Takodana.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, on Takodana.
So maybe they're just taking a bunch of
Tatooine, like where you had the pod race and stuff like that with all the flags and everything. Mm-hmm. So I feel like maybe they're just trying to blend, like they said, this is like some, you know, a generic area we're going to do. And just to give you an idea, like the water, that's a modified Rivers of America. That's and I think you actually can see the one of the boats that are on it that are from like the normal Disney area, kind of the Mark Twain and stuff like that. Yeah.
Oh,
so that's
the
Rivers of that's the Rivers of America. But it looks pretty cool. Like they're going to have, you know, Millennium Falcon coming out, and I'm assuming that's one of the attractions because they said that's what one's going to be. And my guess is on the far right side will probably be the other attraction, just because you see another ship up there, which it looks to be an Imperial ship of some sorts, and where the, like I said, the architecture becomes more angular, more like a what you would see in, you know, Return of the Jedi. Mm-hmm. My guess is the middle walkway area is probably shops, stuff like that. Obviously, Disney souvenir shops, whatnot. Maybe
there'll
some cool
be food. Yeah.
Yeah, probably some food, like that open circle court area. Probably like a food court area type thing where there's food all around it.
Is there like a white bantha in that round courtyard area?
Yeah, might be a dewback. I don't know. It's kind of hard to see. It's just kind of penciled in there, I think. I don't think it's a bantha. It looks too small. But who knows? But that's my point.
It's
like,
hard to tell scale.
But this is just like, I will say, the concept art just looks absolutely awesome. And the fact that that's coming out, it's a 14-acre project at Disneyland.
Ugh, I want to go so bad.
I'm assuming it's going to be similar at Disney World. We haven't really seen a lot of news from the Disney World one come out anywhere. We've seen a lot more Disneyland. I do know they started production in both. Obviously, Disneyland is, you know, was Walt's park. You know, I will say I am a little bit biased to Disneyland just because that's where I grew up. But now that I live in Kentucky, Disney World's a lot easier to get to. But Disneyland, they do, most of the people they see at the parks are locals, so they do close things down to refurbish it, and everything's always really nice and pretty at Disneyland, whereas at Disney World, every time I've been, it's like, they should probably close some of these things for refurbishment, but it's a tourist attraction, you know, so I get like the, you know, the business side of it. It's definitely really cool that we're seeing all this stuff come out from Disneyland. I fully expect, just because unlike Disney World, which is on, the big Disney property, because the whole property is like, you know, Disney World is just gigantic, their property. But Disneyland, I fully expect someone to fly over in a couple months with a drone, even though Disneyland's pretty hot at getting those things to come down. But I wouldn't be surprised if someone flies over with a drone and we can see construction and how's it go soon. Just because, like I said, it's right there off, Harbor Boulevard and Ball and, you know, these obvious big streets that are in Anaheim. So, that's kind of cool to see.
It's a matter of time.
It's just a matter of time before we get to see it. Although one thing that's interesting in the Hypo article, Andrew, I've taken Andrew to Disneyland a bunch of times, and he now goes there on his own. He's even run into my mom randomly at Disneyland when I'm not there since I moved out of Kentucky. But like, that just shows you like my mom goes that often too. But he actually does a sentiment that I really have is we want it to be called Star Wars Land or something Land. Just because in Disneyland, everything is named after land. You have Frontierland, Fantasyland, Tomorrowland, like all of it has the word land in it. Whereas like in Disney World, you don't have that sort of thing. The only one that was really kind of different was like Mickey's Toontown that didn't have the land like in it. And it just never fit right to me. There's a reason it closed down. Anyway, Moving back into the news. Sorry, Mickey Sutan was not a land. It died to me. All right, moving on. The next thing we have is episode 8 is officially wrapped. We've seen posts from Daisy and everybody else about it, including Mark Hamill, who did a post from the wrap party of episode 8 that had some dancing stormtroopers. Did you guys get a chance to look at this on Facebook?
I did, because everything Mark Hamill posts, I look at.
So, he doesn't really say much about it, but I'm pretty sure these are the same stormtroopers that did the dancing from, was it Britain's Got Talent? Does that look familiar to you or sound familiar to you?
Boogie Storm? Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think so. They definitely, they do some pretty good dancing. You know, you can see them nay-nay and everything.
Yeah, I'm just now watching this.
It's amazing, right?
It's definitely worth watching. And the really cool part is the fact you can see the perspective of this film. That, you know, Mark was right up there watching him.
Yeah.
You know, and you're sure he's like, this is so cool. Like, I can just see Mark, like, just being awesome with it.
Do you ever wonder if Mark Hamill and, like, the rest of the cast, if they ever pause at things like this and think to themselves about how weird their lives are to have been involved in such, like, a cultural phenomenon?
You know, I would say I know Mark has, because he's talked about it in interviews and stuff like that. He's even talked about, like, he's like, people recognize me as Luke Skywalker all the time, but then you'll find someone who, like, recognizes my voice as the Joker. And he's talked about how it's so surreal and stuff like that. And just, you know, Mark has had a long career of different things. And I think he definitely, you know, can look back and say, like, I've done a lot, and it's very surreal to be part of these, like, major franchises. You know what I mean? Like, it's not right. Like he's done, like, think of Harrison Ford. He's Indiana Jones, Han Solo. Like, he's done some major franchises. So I think they have to have looked back and reflected on it. But this right here is interesting. Like, I don't know if you guys have ever been to a film or TV show wrap party. Wrap parties are always, like, they always go way out. Like, that's kind of one of the big things. And I can just imagine them having, you know, stormtroopers dancing here. They probably have some chocolate fountain somewhere. Like, I've been to a couple different wrap parties for different films I've worked on or TV shows, and they always go take it to the extreme. Like, it's just, it's awesome. Like, it's something that if you work 3-4 days on a set and you get invited back to the wrap party, even, you know, on a big production, you're like, this is really cool. Like, it's the place to meet and greet and just talk to anyone, especially if you're, like, kind of nervous to talk to somebody. They're all there. Everyone's there having a good time, drinking food and all that. So, it just looks like it was a ball. Plus, you did hashtag.
I feel like the cast is really close anyway. Like, they seem to be, like, pretty tight-knit across, like, everyone. So, from the extras to the actual actors to the cameramen, like, everyone just seems to be, like, really close. So, I feel like that the Star Wars wrap parties are probably a lot of fun.
I'm sure the Star Wars wrap parties are a lot of fun. I would love to be a fly on the wall at one of those things. So,
if they're anything like the PopCon wrap parties.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Well, I think most wrap parties are like that. It's like where everyone who worked, you spent, you know, months working. You're like, all right, now it's time to blow off some steam and have fun. And just, you know, to reminisce on all the things you've done and everything. So I think it's good. All right. Well, that's all our news for this week. Again, I fully expect next week to have a ridiculous amount of news, possibly even spotlight topic being just the Rogue One trailer. So there's going to be a whole lot of things happening this weekend.
Sad tears.
I know, you won't be around. That's all right. We'll have our best episode yet.
I'd be in San Diego Comic Con.
Oh, right.
In fact, around the time when we'll be due to record, I will be playing traitor because I will be probably seeing Star Trek.
It's all right. I have in the works, I'm not saying who, but I have somebody who's also lives on the other side of the world, the other side of the pond, who may be co-hosting with me next week.
He's replacing me is what he's trying to say.
I'm just saying, I need somebody from the UK to replace somebody from the UK. You know, I haven't talked to this guy in a while. When we were talking, he was super excited to possibly be on. So, anyway.
This guy needs to pretend to be me for at least the
I'll tell him to pretend to be you. I'll be like, hey, say your name's Donya at first. All right. Well, moving on to our spotlight topic, Han Solo. You know what? Before we do anything else, the first thing that came to my mind when I talked about Han Solo here is, mm-hmm. did any of you guys ever see the Robot Chicken, Boba Fett, Han Solo, and Carbonite bit?
Yes.
Yes.
Solo, not so solo. Like, that's what I said, Han Solo, my man. That's all I'm thinking. It's like, I'm thinking, like, I'm Boba Fett, you're Han Solo, and I got, you know, and that's all I'm thinking right now. Like, oh, wow, this is a great mindset to be in while I'm talking about, you know, one of my favorite characters. Anyway, so Han Solo, guys, first things we got to talk about here is Han shot first.
I love it.
You know, he shot, you know, we've introduced to him in A New Hope. He's mm-hmm. in a wretched wretched hive of scum and villainy, in Mos Eisley. And, you know, after we get introduced to him, he gets cornered by Greedo and he shoots him in cold blood.
Mm-hmm.
What do you guys think about his character with that?
I love it. I love what that says about him as a character, because it means that he's basically, he doesn't think through decisions carefully. Is what that tells you. He sees the most obvious response and he takes it, whether or not it's the smartest one. And he doesn't necessarily care about consequences. And that tells you so much about Han through the rest
films. Cares and about consequences.
He does not care about consequences.
He paid for him. He said sorry about the mess and he paid them. He thought about
that
it.
That doesn't mean... Yeah, no. That's the immediate consequence. And that's the cocky, I'm kind of a jerk response that he can get away with in the moment. He doesn't think about what killing Greedo means in the long term.
That's very true, because killing someone has a lot more consequences than just a little bit of blood in the cantina. Yeah.
I guess. But, you know, I'm thinking the immediate needs of that bartender, you know, that stall is now bloody and it's got a dead body in it. He's got to clean it up.
Yeah, but he's also not... He's,
you know, he's going to lose business because of it.
Don't try to argue that Han Solo is throwing a couple of credits down on the
bar
top
and saying okay.
Sorry for the mess, because he actually feels bad about what he's done. And he's not just trying to be a jackass. That's Han.
That is Han. It's the same thing when it goes to like their relationship in Empire Strikes Back, mm-hmm. when Leia says, "I love you," and he says, I know.
Yeah.
He's like, "I know you love me."
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna still go into this and get frozen and not fight for it. So, you know, whatever. I know. Like it's I
such
get
a
it.
Good
like,
scene though.
It is. It's a great scene, and it definitely shows his characters, the same character through and through. He evolves. I think he evolves
he
a
does,
little bit.
And that's what's important about both of those scenes, is you can see the progression of the character throughout the story. You can see him changing from this, you know, shoot from the hip, who cares what happens in the future, I have no attachments kind of asshole, to somebody who's like willing to give up the woman that he loves so that she can be with the man that she loves, even though it's her brother and he doesn't know that. And a very selfless act at the end.
Yeah. And that right there is why mm-hmm. I still get mad at the fact that George retconned it so that he didn't shoot first. Like,
yes, me too.
That is the exact reason why I get so mad, because the character arc makes so much sense when mm-hmm. he shoots first. But if you don't have that, then it doesn't mm-hmm. work as well. It doesn't make sense at all.
Right.
It just makes Greedo a bad shot.
It does.
That's
yeah,
all it does.
It doesn't, which he's not.
It makes him lucky, and it makes Greedo a bad shot. Like, honestly, at that close mm-hmm. a range, you know, if you're going to shoot somebody, you better shoot to kill him if you're that close to range, because mm-hmm. it's mm-hmm. what's going to happen, right?
Yeah.
So
right.
the fact Han took it to be shoot first, like, that's just so is his character. He's not going to, you know, he knew what was happening. Greedo has right. hand on the trigger, too. It was him or Greedo, and he's not going to let Greedo mm-hmm. take it out on him. Also, yeah. it would have been a really short story arc for him.
I really hate that they added that other scene where Han's trying to negotiate with Jabba.
Oh, in the special edition. Well,
yeah.
they filmed that originally.
I know, but it was cut for a reason. Because all it does is it makes him look like a wheedly little, like, bleh. Like it. He's not cool in that scene. He's like somebody trying to get like an extension on a paper.
You got to remember. All right, so you got to remember something about A New Hope, Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi. We're just focusing on the original trilogy here, not even Force Awakens yet. Out of those three films, only George Lucas directed A New Hope, right? Mm-hmm. He didn't direct the other two. Mm-hmm. Beyond that, though, A New Hope, like, there's many, many books about his wife talking about how Star Wars A New Hope was horrible.
Mm-hmm. Like,
even a
and
great
it is.
Scene.
Compared to the other movies, it's not nearly as good.
It's not nearly as good. And she's talking, but just to give it a full perspective, it's like my favorite scene of her talking about as an editor, because, you know, that was my background, was television editing, filming. Like, that's what I went to school mm-hmm. for. My craft was editing, storytelling. That way, not director. I didn't want to do any of that, but editing. And reading one of her books, she was talking about the scene from after Luke is pushed down by a sand person. Mm-hmm. And the sand person. Well, George, she showed the actual footage. It's just the arm going up and then down, and that's it.
Yep.
Like,
yeah,
she rolled
to get the extra
ones. She rolled it back and forth four times to get hit, raising his arms up, and then they dubbed in the audio of him, like, yelling. Like, mm-hmm. that was not actually filmed. That's rocking and rolling back and forth on the film, going forward mm-hmm. and back. And it's like, it's those types of...
Yeah, you can tell when you watch it.
Yeah, and it's those types of editing decisions with mm-hmm. Jabba being cut out in the beginning, you know, before mm-hmm. they added the special edition, that, like, I feel like that's the actual movie. You know, obviously, George created all this, and he has every right to go back and, you know, manipulate it how he wants in special editions and the George Lucas mm-hmm. edition and whatever edition he wants, but at the same time, like, that's not how we were all presented it when it first came out, you know?
Exactly. And the other thing that really gets me about it as well is that he has constantly refused to submit that footage mm-hmm. to be archived, because it won an Oscar, and they archive all of the films that win Oscars in their state, like, that mm-hmm. they won that Oscar for. And it is the only film that hasn't been archived because they refuse, or George Lucas has refused, to provide that footage to them to archive it, because that was the film that won an Oscar, mm-hmm. not any of the subsequent edits. Mm-hmm. And... yeah, the only thing...
It won multiple Oscars, but yeah.
No, I know, and that's what I mean, though, is the film that...
To my understanding, at least from my understanding of everything, I feel like the original film print, the original negatives, they're badly damaged. Is that not correct? Like, I remember when they went to go do the special edition, there are articles everywhere about how bad it had been damaged, and just things like, again, going from the original negatives, like, they had deteriorated significantly in the Lucas archives because they weren't stored somewhere that could be archived correctly.
Yeah. Well, so, there are people who have restored it.
We know. And if you look at, like, Star Wars Uncut, the original one that mm-hmm. everyone, you know, that floats around the internet, not saying download it illegally or anything like that, but when you look at it, it came from a couple different prints. Like, it came from a theater print that someone had miraculously stored really well. They took it from the Blu-rays, because the Blu-rays had done so much work. They did it from the mm-hmm. 90s, was it the 1999 or 2000 THX release on DVD. And they also mm-hmm. did it with the same time the special editions were released on DVD. They released the original theatrical versions on DVD also. Like, those are the best mm-hmm. ones you can actually buy, is those theatrical versions on DVD that aren't special edition. But they weren't cleaned up at all. They were just like the original mm-hmm. theatrical versions on DVD. So they combined all those and recolored it, because if you look at the Blu-ray coloring, it's color timed completely different from what we remember in theaters. Now, it can also be us looking at it through a nostalgic lens, but they're definitely more blue tone-wise. Mm-hmm. And we're getting completely off topic from Han Solo here, talking about A New Hope. I'm like, why am I talking about this? This isn't Han Solo at all, so I am sorry about that. Moving back to Han Solo, this might be a topic for something another day.
Anyway, time to work on that editing.
Right? I'm going to leave this totally in so everyone can hear it.
It's so important, though, because that editing not only changed, like, just how the film was presented to us in respect to visuals and the sound. Yeah, it changes the characters, which is why it's so important in respect mm-hmm. to Han's character arc. Like,
and
he's
that's
probably
true.
the most appropriate person to talk about in respect to the mm-hmm. edits that happened.
Yeah, because he's the most heavily impacted one with those two decisions in that first film.
Yeah.
And then you got to remember Jabba's Palace, the Jedi Rocks dance scene was also added, and that added a whole lot to the movie, too. But Han's in that scene also, so, you know, it's relevant right now. But yeah, I agree with you. Like, the editing changes With Han shooting first or not shooting first, it definitely changes what it says about his character, and also his character development between A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back. But before he even gets to Empire Strikes Back, you know, when they're going to Alderaan and they get captured by the Death Star, you see Han kind of still being out this for his money, right? You know, he obviously has a lot, you know, a debt he has to pay to Jabba. He needs to get paid. He even tells Chewie, this can really save my skin. So when they go to save the princess, like, Luke has to convince her she's rich, like, is what he goes, really, how rich? Like, that's kind of like, all right, I'll do this for the money. And that's Han's character.
He is super shallow. He's so shallow at the beginning of the films. It's wonderful to see how much he grows as a person.
He does. And that's exactly it. He's so shallow. And even at the very end of A New Hope, you know, he's getting his money, and Luke comes up to him. He's like, "You sure you're not going to stick around?" He's like, "No." But you can see him starting to warm up. You see him do something he does in Force Awakens. He says, "Hey, you know, you're pretty good with a blaster. Han and Chewie and I can definitely use someone like you on the Falcon." Like, kind of like extend an invitation to Luke. He's like, "No, you know what we're up against here." And like, Luke's obviously moral compass is like, you know, true north, where Han needs a little bit of pushing from probably Luke and Chewie to kind of get there. And, you know, in the end, though, he comes through, right? You know, he's the one that, as much as Daniel loves Wedge, and Wedge had to fly away because, you know, he couldn't do anything back there with Vader behind Luke and him, you know, Han and Chewie come in, you know, and they save the day. They, you know, shoot the TIE fighters, Vader gets spun out, and Luke is able to blow this sucker and go home, you know? It's definitely something where you see his character develop, whether it was him on his own or Chewbacca. And I don't know if it's canon anymore, but you know, there was a story where Chewbacca is the one who convinced Han to go back to go ahead and help with the battle. So I don't know if it's canon anymore. If I can find the exact spot where it's at, I can tell you, but I don't remember where I read that somewhere, but it was Chewie that convinced Han to go back and help out. So
Bless Chewie, because we love him.
Because we all love Chewie, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, we see Han's characters grow from, you know, A New Hope, Empire Strikes Back, we kind of talked about already. But when it comes to the Return of the Jedi, you know, Han is actually a character who is essentially, if you will, a standstill. You know, he's frozen carbonite at the beginning. And as he goes back, he's leading a team on Endor. And, you know, it's a lot more, you know, emotional with Leia, you know, in Empire Strikes Back than anything else. Like, obviously, there's the beginning of the love story in Empire, but it's all, you know, he's with Leia there, he's going after, you know,
I think everything you could argue that the beginning of their love story starts in A New Hope.
Okay, I'll say the beginning of their love story starts in there, you know, we call her princess and stuff, but you really start to see it take place and kind of grow, if you will, in Empire.
You can see him pursuing it, but I think if you are looking for it in A New Hope, you can see that Han is interested right off the bat. Like, I don't think it's a subtle interest in Princess Leia. I think he's like, "Whoa, check out this babe," and then trying to figure out how to interact with her.
Check out this babe. I like that.
That is such a Han. If Han lived now, then, that would be a thing that he would say.
You know, it's interesting, as you're talking about check out this babe, like, the first thing that came to mind thinking of Han Solo is, like, I think of, like, Grease, you know, Danny Zuko. Like, I feel like that would be a Han, that'd be like a Han Solo, that'd be Han Solo, right? You know, it's like, you know, it's like Grease Lightning, Millennium Falcon, it's automatic, it's systematic, it's Millennium Falcon, go Millennium Falcon. You know, I feel like that's kind of what
Han Solo
character would be. That ridiculous posturing masculinity in front of other people.
Exactly.
That like, like, it's so cringy and kind of off-putting, but not who you really are.
Yeah.
Well, because think about it. Like,
he
wants to be
a cool guy, and he's so not a cool guy.
He's really not cool.
And it's really bad that this parallel between, now I'm going to make this parallel between Grease and, you know, Han Solo, because think about it, like, in Grease, which I just happened to rewatch it recently, it was on TV, so it's in my mind. But, like, him and Sandy did the whole, like, lovey-dub thing, like, really nice, and he was a good guy at the beach before summer. Then he gets back, he puts his leather jacket on, he's all cool, right? That's Han Solo all the way through and through. I shoot first, I do this, I'm like, I'm a smuggler, scoundrel.
I think in Grease, is it Danny Zuko?
Yeah.
I'm saying,
it's been a long time since I've seen that movie. He he isn't that dude, but Han is. He's like internalized this this, you know, like rough and ready scoundrel personality. He sees himself as that. And in Grease, the whole trick of it is Danny's a good kid who hangs out with a bad crowd.
Yeah, I would agree that that is the difference.
Okay.
Yeah. Han wants to believe that he's cool.
Yes, Han is the blonde guy who's friends with Danny and Grease.
Okay, the blonde guy, Danny and Grease.
Kanicki, that's it. Han
wow,
is Kanicki.
I just watched this, you know it better than I do. Anyway, let's move on from Star Wars the musical right now into... I would totally watch, but you know, if anyone decides
to make
a
Star Wars musical. There is a Star Wars the musical.
I know.
Yep.
Annie, it's so good. If you haven't watched it.
There's a lot of musicals amazing. For everything nowadays.
Anyway. Yeah, but it's a Starkid one, and Starkid do awesome musicals. So.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, the Star Kid ones are good. Yeah, I like the Harry Potter ones too. Anyway, moving on. Han and Luke. What do you guys think about Han and Luke's relationship?
I mean, I love the relationship between the entire trio through the whole thing. But Han and Luke's friendship is kind of just really interesting in respect to where it started and where it moves to. Because it's kind of like where you see it right at the end. Han doesn't just want to give up that relationship with Leia for Leia.
No, he wants to.
He
do
wants
it for
to
Luke
do it
too.
For Luke as well. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, that's a really interesting thing to see him move from how he treats Luke in A New Hope to the fact that that's other than Chewbacca, that's his best bro.
Yeah, kind exactly. Of.
And there are, like, certain lines that you don't cross in that respect. But,
yeah,
Han and Luke's friendship, I really like it because they're really interesting foils for each other.
Yes.
Because in typical either sci-fi stuff or even films where you've got a male lead, typically the character like Han would be your hero. And I really like that Luke is a foil for Han and is the real kind of hero of the story, and how they kind of play off one another. Like, their relationship's really interesting, but it's also really nice to see a character like Han not being the true hero of the story, and something like Luke's personality being upheld as, like, the true hero of this kind of story. Like, who Han is underneath,
right,
and where he comes to by the end of the original trilogy, like, that's the true Han, and he gets there through his relationship with Luke and Leia, and that's, I think it's just really fascinating to watch start to finish how the two of them, like, impact on Han, and how he changes, like, it's very, very fascinating to me.
Yeah, I'll take Han, you know, Han obviously grows, but at the same time, like, my biggest thing with Han is, like, what happens between his relationships with Leia and Luke after Return of the Jedi? You know, we know something happens, and we don't really know what it is. It happens after Bloodline sometime, where him and Leia get kind of estranged. You know, Luke and him, like, aren't buds anymore, but they are buds, because Luke is literally off hoboing it up, sulking, you know. And we kind of see this all come to fruition when, like, you know, Rey and him and Han talk, it's Finn that says, you knew him, right? They talk about, you knew him. And he's like, yeah, I knew him. You know, it's true. All of it line in Force Awakens is probably my favorite line, because it's a complete parallel to him from A New Hope saying, I don't believe in one hokey religion. He doesn't believe in A New Hope. And at this point, he's like, it's true. All of it, everything you may have heard is real. His character there? You know, he's let his friendships, his most important relationships, you know, kind of.
It is. I want to know why Han, like, first off, I want to know why he and Leia had a falling out. Was it because of, like, the aftermath of what Ben did and how that impacted them, knowing that their son had killed a bunch of people? Or was it degrading even before then? Because, like we were talking about earlier, they get married right after Endor. You know, married right out of a war, that doesn't always work out well. in terms of a relationship.
I mean, you get some of it in The Force Awakens when they reunite. Like, he was saying, like, I didn't think you'd want to see me after everything with Ben. And she was like, you think I didn't want you around because I saw Ben and you? That's not...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why I want you to be here.
Yeah. And, you know, they both obviously would have a lot of grief to work through after Ben defects to the First Order because, you know, he killed a lot of people and that's going to shake them up massively. And they both went back, like they said in the Force Awakens, to the one thing they'd always known. Leia with being a leader and Han with being a scoundrel. It's a defense mechanism. It's kind of reverting back to a safe space by putting the shield back up. Reverting back to
before the growth, before A New Hope. You know, it's kind of back to what they were.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting, you know, without going too much into like the EU that doesn't exist anymore. You know, last week I recommended one of the books, the, was it the Jedi? Was this the 17 book series? God, I can never remember the title of it, but it's Vector Prime is the first book in it. In that book, a major character died. Again, this is EU, so I'm going to say this is a mini spoiler, so cover your ears for 30 seconds. But in that book, Chewbacca dies. So in that book was the first time a major character died in the EU. Now, this is all before they wiped it and becomes legends, and obviously we know Chewbacca's alive now. But they had so many books showing Han's character grieving from that. And in all honesty, thinking about that comparison to seeing him going back to being a smuggler, him and Leia becoming estranged, him not really following up with Luke going off in seclusion, like all those things, it all kind of ties to his character. Like it's always been there that like he doesn't handle that sort of stuff well. Like in the EU books, the, you know, the legend books now, you know, he ended up having a drinking problem. He blamed family members. You know, Leia had a hard time dealing with him anymore because, you know, at the same time, like, you know, Chewie had a hero's death. He died saving one of Han's kids, which don't exist now, obviously, in the canon, new canon. But he blamed his kid for his best friend's death. And it's like, you know, how do you do that? How do you have a father, you know, blame a kid? And when I look at, like, in canon now, it's like, you know, if it, you know, in The Force Awakens, we take it to that the big thing that was the schism between Han and Leia was Ben turning to the dark side. And in the novelization of The Force Awakens, we learn out more that Leia really wanted Han to stick around, but Han didn't.
And I could see him blaming himself, though.
And that's exactly what it gets to, is Leia tried to protect Han. She tried to protect Han and tried to protect Ben from Snoke. Snoke had been there the whole time. And I'm actually almost wondering, again, I haven't read, you know, Life Debt, but we know, you know, Leia can, you know, we've learned that Leia can, you know, reach out to Ben in the womb. You know, we also learned that she, in the Force Awakens novelization, that Snoke has always been there. Snoke has been whispering to Ben since a young age, and she's been protecting him from it. So I'm wondering if, even in Life Debt, we're going to find out who Snoke is and see if Snoke just is another person reaching out already, you know, planting these seeds in Ben from the womb side. But it's one of those things where that schism between Han and Leia really is there because Han doesn't know how to react to it. He's probably not the most intuitive person into feelings, like most guys, I would say, kind of way.
I don't think he's in touch with his emotions, and I don't think he knows how to handle situations when they go sideways. Like, he doesn't know how to deal with the consequences of actions, and I think because of that, he doesn't know how to plan for things or how to approach situations with a long-term perspective. And so in the immediacy of it, where his son has just done this horrific thing, of course he's going to think that Leia wants space. And of course he's not going to want to bother her about it. He's not going to open up and try to talk to her. And it's just going to create a rift between the two of them.
Yeah. And I mean, even between him and Luke as well. I mean, if you think about the fact that these were Luke's students that that Ben went and murdered, and you've got to imagine that they had some kind of connection between Luke teaching them and like that kind of relationship between them. You know, that's gonna be what, tenfold Like, yeah. We don't know exactly how many people died, do we? I don't think they've...
I don't think so. I don't think they've given us a number.
They haven't told us
exactly how many people Ben killed or how many students Luke lost. But, you know, in respect to Luke's grief there, I don't know that Han would be able to know how to handle that either, or even how to speak to Luke about it, because that was his son.
Well, and then if Luke's also... if his immediate response is, you know, I've brought this upon my students because of who I am and what I know. I have to get out of here and hide away. Because that's what I think his mindset is. We haven't gone into it.
It's kind of said that... I can't remember exactly where it was said. Was it in The Force Awakens or was it in one of the books? That the reason that Luke left is he was looking for the first Jedi temple.
No, that it was simply implied. That this is like Han says when he tells Rey and Finn that those who knew him best say he was looking for the first Jedi temple.
Yeah.
So that's where it comes from. But if anything, I almost feel like I just opened up The Force Awakens novelization, and I know this line was actually in the movie because they have it in quotes. When Han is talking to Leia after they get reunited, you know, it's one of those things where she's talking about like, hey, you need to talk to him. You know, and Han says, me? No, if Luke couldn't reach him with all his skills and training, how can I? You know, it's Han doesn't think of himself as, well, think about it. What is Han's upbringing? What is he compared to the other two of those trio? You know, Leia is a princess, so the general, she is force sensitive. You know, he also knows her true parentage. You know, and Luke is this Jedi master. You know, even you see it in Return of the Jedi, you know, he says that delusions of grandeur. He says, like, Luke, a Jedi master, I'm out for a little while. And then, you know, everyone gets these delusions of grandeur. Like, that's it. Like, he sees everyone else around him. And he's literally, like, us as fans of this and being the outside onlookers can see Han go toe-to-toe with all of them. You know, he is that same character. He's on the same level of them. But he doesn't think that of himself.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree.
And so, like, I can definitely see his mechanism to deal with, like, oh my gosh, my son, you know, we learned that Han is, you know, not spending as much time with Leia, you know, in the years after, you know, when Ben goes to train with Luke, you know, he's off doing racing and stuff like that. He's one of the judges for the Sabres races and stuff like that. So he's off doing his own thing, but he's still in touch with Leia. He still has a great relationship with her, but it's that schism of when Ben falls, that he falls back into his own, like, kind of defense mechanism of being like, okay, I'm not as good as them, and they need to figure this out without me. You know, at least that's what I feel like is what he does. And he just kind of runs away, and he gets, you know, partners back up with Chewie, and they go looking for the Falcon at some point, and that's kind of what he does.
Yeah.
They go capturing Raftars.
Yeah. It's and to getting into extraordinary amounts of debt. Multiple gangs.
Well, I mean, Death Gang, not too bad. Anyway, moving on.
He won't have to worry about all that debt. They're not going to get it back from him.
Wow, that is so insensitive. But, you know, it's all right. It's all right. They're not going to get that debt back. He's not going to pay it back because he's dead.
Because he's dead.
Wait, so hold on a second. So if he owes all of that, or if he owed all of that money, would it not then be on his next of kin?
No.
To pay that back?
I'm going to believe it works like I think it does in the United States, which is where if you die with debt, it doesn't get passed on to your family. I could be completely wrong about that, but I think that's how it works.
Yeah.
That also being said, these aren't the kind of people who are going to really be following laws.
It's very true.
So here's the thing. It's like, now here's the question. Would it go to Leia or would it go to Ben?
Leia?
Yeah, I would imagine Leia would be, or Chewie would be.
But we are assuming that they're married.
Well, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Life Dead says they're married. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Life Dead says they're married, but.
Next of kin. Han.
I mean, when I fill that stuff out, I put my husband down before I put my daughter.
That's true. But I almost, for the comical effect, I'd almost want them to stroll on up to the First Order and be like, "Hello, Mr. Kylo Ren, your dad owed us some money." Like,
you know, he would just like, pull out his lightsaber and throw a temper tantrum, right?
Yeah. No, that's my point. Like, I totally see him just doing a temper tantrum. So, I'd be, for comedic effect, I'd be okay with it. Yeah. But yeah, like, you know, Han's death is interesting. Like, do you guys think? All right, so there's two ways to look at this. You know, I've read the novelization of the book, and then if you've also read, just watch the movie. And there's a lot of people that are arguing about this in two different ways. And if you read one, it makes it very apparent what at least the thought mm-hmm. was. And then if you just watch the movie, you can infer a whole bunch of different things, which I like being able to infer a bunch.
Mm-hmm.
But in his death, you know, he's talking to Ben, and he sees, you know, he convinces mm-hmm. Kylo Ren to have his mask off and everything. Yeah. And the lightsaber they both hold the lightsaber, and it's like, so the mm-hmm. question is, do you think him as a character is growing, trying to reach and talk to his son? Or other people are saying that he knew he was going to die the minute he stepped out there, and he was telling his son to kill him because Kylo Ren is a double agent for, you know, Luke. Like,
I like that theory, but I don't agree with it.
Yeah, I've got a third option.
Okay.
Which also goes off. It's kind of a mix-ish between the two, almost. Because obviously Leia said, if you see our son, bring him home. Mm-hmm. So when he steps out onto the walkway and goes over, I think that he was aware that there was a possibility that he could die. But
I don't think he thought that Ben would kill him.
You don't think so? Because my thought is that that's a different way to bring him home, because Ben thinks that by killing his father, that it completes his fall to the dark side, that it removes that connection mm-hmm. and frees him to fully embrace the dark side, because we see mm-hmm. him struggling with the call to the light
right
through the film. I think that it works in the opposite way, that by killing Han, that it just makes that conflict inside him stronger, because he's never going to be able to shake that. He is mm-hmm. always going to have that immediate thought, immediate connection at all times. That's going to haunt him for the rest of his life. So mm-hmm. I think that it is a different way of bringing him home, because it could essentially be a trigger to move Kylo to a different place.
I may have to think on that.
I mean, it's pretty dark.
It is pretty dark. I don't know. I'm watching it like as a parent, and I'm kind of convinced that all parents think that their children are good, and there's a part of you that will always love your child, like at this very visceral level. And watching that scene, I think when Han steps out on that bridge, he doesn't see his son the murderer, or his son the member of the First Order, or his son the Sith. He just sees his son. And so he just wants to take care of his child, and the way that he can do that is to try to pull him out of this darkness that he's fallen into. And I don't think Han expects it to necessarily work, but I think he's willing to do whatever he can to help his child.
Including die for him.
And, I mean, when I saw that scene the first time, like, I knew, because of the visual cues that you have in that scene, that it was not going to end well.
No, because the lighting changed very obviously. Yes, and you were just like oh, great, that's where it's going.
But yeah, I think he's willing to die for Ben. I think he's willing to do whatever he can to help his son. And I think that last moment when he, like, cups his face before falling is, for me, the most emotional I've ever been over any movie ever. I don't think I've ever gotten so sad.
I'll agree with you on that. Like, that last bit, like, really. Like, if you remember, like, as he walked out to it, I pull up, the script and novelization right now, just so I have it side by side as we talk about this. You know, Kylo Ren tells Han, "Will you help me?" And Han says, "Yes, anything." And at that point, that's when Kylo Ren pulls out, unclips his lightsaber and brings it up. And you know, those lines, you know, you could take it either way. You know, he's like, "I'll do anything for you, including die for you, if that's what you need me to do," right? Like, which we kind of just discussed. Mm-hmm. But as it goes to it, you know, it's like, you know, Ren says thank you after he kills him. But then, you know,
Han's because he thinks this is the last step that I need to fully embrace the dark side. So of course he's going to say thank you.
Yep, exactly. But, you know, it's something like, but then just to keep going, novelization, Han stared back to the face of the creature that had been his son. There was nothing to see there, only darkness in the shape of a face. Alien, unthinking, unfeeling. His knees buckled and beaming tilted down with him as he crumpled. You know, it's literally like, you know, he sees at the last moment when he touches his son's face, you know, that unnerving look he gives him is one of those things. Like, it's like, that's not what I meant. You're not my son. Yeah. You're this monster who your mother, you know, he started it off with saying, "Hey, your mother misses you. Mom misses you. Come home." Like, it's okay. It's never too late to turn away from what you've done. And he's just done this, you know, type of thing.
I kind of hate it. I won't say I fully hate it, but I kind of hate it because I think him being, I don't know. I think him suddenly seeing his son as a terrible monster, like, kind of ruins the poignancy of that scene. I think it would be better if he still saw just his baby boy, because that's heartbreaking.
I would agree with that. I take issue with a lot of things in the novelization of The Force Awakens. Like, some of it is, like, really just kind of not great. And I think
it's the novelization. And it was based off an earlier version of the script.
Yeah,
too, so.
Exactly. So I kind of, half of the time, I'm just like a pinch of salt for pretty much everything in movie novelizations. Like, there are some bits that are unintentionally hilarious with what it kind of, like, suggests, but also just some of it is not great. So I don't know how far to believe it, but so I will always, over everything, take the interpretation of what we get on screen versus what they put in the novelizations, because they're never completely accurate.
Yeah,
you know, the novelizations are meant there to, they provide some insight to things that aren't obviously on screen because it is a novelization of it, you know. But I don't think anyone's ever argued with, is the novelization canon versus the movies versus something else? Because like I said, seeing in the novelization saying that Han stared back at this creature that was his son, you know, like, that leaves that open to very little interpretation from that. But at the same time, you know, looking at Han's character develop over time, going from this guy who would shoot first to someone who would give up someone who loves for not only her, but also his friend, you know, that is something that, you know, his character has grown. His character is something different. And as it is, like, the schism, you know, the separation between Han and Leia happened about because their son, you know, did these horrible things, and he didn't know how to cope with it. He didn't know how to fight it, especially since he thought he was inadequate compared to Luke, who couldn't do anything, right? So at this point, when he does get killed by his son, murdered by his son, in cold blood, like, there's minor hesitation you see in the film. But that hesitation is almost as much as Han as it is, you know, Kylo Ren waiting before he grabs the saber. You know, it's one of those things where him looking at him, and you said, like, you know, him touching the face before he falls over. You know, I'll tell you, I had waterworks in the theater during The Force Awakens. But it was really, it came down to, it wasn't even that, like, the touching of Kylo Ren's face. It was hearing Chewie yell after that. Like, right after that, as he starts to fall, you hear Chewie just do a roar, and it's like, oh my gosh, it's his best friend for, you know, that was just heartbreaking there. And then you see everyone else yelling, and it's just like, maybe it just took that long for the weight of what just happened to hit me in the theater the first time seeing it, but it was like that moment afterwards that I was just like, oh my gosh.
For me, what killed me was seeing Chewie piloting the Millennium Falcon. That's when I started losing it in the theater.
That was the point where I was like, okay, this is harder not okay. than I was, this is harder to watch than I was expecting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because that's Han's seat. And you never see anybody there except for Lando. But seeing Chewie behind the pilot stick was just, for me, that's where I was really the most upset about it. Oh, I've made myself sad. Now I'm all sad.
I know. Han Solo, you were a great character up until you died.
Well, even in his death, he's a great character.
Well, and that's exactly it. You know, his character brought weight to something. And actually, it's interesting because, like, how do you guys think going into episode 8 and 9 even, how Han's death is going to affect the rest of everyone else?
I really want him to come back as a really snarky, cocky Force ghost and just, like, show up randomly being an asshole to people.
But don't you need to be in force tune sensitive. With the Force and Force sensitive in order to be a Force ghost?
I don't care.
He can come back as, like, he just program C-3PO to be Han Solo. You know, just his personality as C-3PO. You know, just watching that protocol so droid walk around and act like Han Solo would be hilarious.
Oh my God.
No, but like, I feel like this is going to have a huge effect on episode 8 and 9. You know? With my hopes that none of the other major characters, you know, bite the bucket like Han does. You know, I would hate to see Luke die. I hate to see Leia die.
Kick the bucket.
Sorry. I'm still medicated. I'm going to blame it all on every mistake I make today on that medication. But, like, you know, kick the bucket. I don't want to see Luke die. I don't want to see Leia die.
Oh, you know? Me either.
But at the same time, like, this is obviously, you know, it allows those characters to grieve. It allows, you know, Rey to talk to Luke and Luke to be like, okay, you know, I know what's going on. I felt Han's death, you know, in the Force. You know, why? Because he's so attuned to him. He's so close to
him. How upsetting would it be if Leia felt Han's death and Luke didn't?
That would be, no. You know, obviously there's different levels there. You know,
he's way away on some tiny backwater that nobody has ever seen before.
Oh, could you imagine if Rey telling him is like the first time that he knows he finds out?
I think
or Chewbacca.
I think Rey and Chewie would have to.
Chewbacca telling Luke that Han has died.
I think he knows Han's dead. I think he'll know because Leia was able to feel it. And then right after that, you know, they end up seeing Luke on Taco on Ahch-To. But it's one of those things where I think Luke felt it, but he doesn't know how. You know, like, he didn't see that. I mean, you know what I mean?
Is there a proximity thing? Do they have to be able to be within a certain distance for you to
I think they just have to be attuned to it. You know, like, Leia was focusing on Han and them, you know, on the assault. And with minimal training, she felt it, you know? Right, you know what I mean? Like, she felt his death. Where Obi-Wan felt the death of all the people of Alderaan.
So think about how Luke felt the death of everyone in the Hosnian
Prime.
In the Hosnian system.
Yeah, not
so
just the Prime.
So Luke knew, because I remember, like, so if Obi-Wan felt all of Alderaan, now you can argue that it's because Obi-Wan was thinking of going to Alderaan.
Luke didn't feel that when he was right there.
Exactly. Luke didn't. He was not trained. So, it has to be someone who is trained or looking for it. And so here's where the argument's going to lie is, did Obi-Wan feel Alderaan because they were traveling to Alderaan and thinking about it, and that made him in tune to it, so when Alderaan was destroyed, he felt it? And that's why Leia was able to feel Han's death? Because if that is the actual reason, there's a good chance Luke did not feel the Hosnian system or even Han's death. But if it's also just your attunement to the Force, you know...
And he's the only Jedi Master.
There's the only Jedi Master. If it's just you have to be attuned to the Force, and, you know, there are other things in EU, which, again, is not canon anymore, and some stuff in the Clone Wars series and stuff, and even Rebels, like, how could you have not felt that? You know, something happened. So, I'm going to assume that, you know, someone who's as tuned to the Force as Luke is, he's going to have felt, you know, the Hosnian system. And if you just felt something like that, you know something is up, and you're going to start searching your feelings, probably start meditating more onto the whole thing. And he's probably even thinking of coming back himself if he needs to, right? So if that's the case, you know, he's probably going to be out on the lookout, feeling, searching, and then he's going to feel his close friend die. So I'm going to take an assumption for me in episode 8 and 9, or 8, Luke is going to have known about Han's passing. He won't know how, and it's going to be something where Han's death by Ben, by Kylo Ren, is gonna strike something in Luke. It's gonna be like, because he's gonna say he failed him, because essentially, like, even then Han put it on Luke. It's like, if how can I do it if Luke couldn't do it with all his skill and training? Like, Luke, if Luke couldn't do it, well, it had to be up to Luke. Luke is the one who should have been able to do it, and Han tried and he died from it. Like, Luke, you need to do something about this. And so I feel like it's gonna set up
how Kylo Ren convinces Luke coming back,
and also just like that, and also Kylo Ren's story arc. I don't feel like Kylo Ren's going to get redemption.
No, I don't think he's going to be at all.
I think they're going to want it redemption, and I think they're still going to want a redemption right now. You know, he's still family to Luke and to Leia, but I think in the end, it's going to come down to Rey who's going to have to kill him, which is going to be a different decision.
I wouldn't be surprised if Kylo even rejects an opportunity for redemption.
Oh, I think they'll offer it. I think they'll definitely offer it, because that's what this whole story has all been about. And I think, and I think even Rey's going to offer, you know, redemption again in the end, and she's going to have to make a decision that Luke couldn't make when, you know, Luke was offered the, you know, opportunity to strike down Vader, and he's like, "No, I refuse you. I'm a Jedi like my father."
You think she's going to say yes?
And I think she's going to take that step and do it, because, like, here's the thing: is we've seen stuff from the extended universe come about and work its way into canon again. One of the biggest story arcs in the extended universe was Han and Leia's kids. Leia's son, Jason, falling down to the dark side. He fell to the dark side, became became a Darth, was it Cadus? And it turned up to his twin sister, you know, Jaina, to go ahead and try to redeem him. Well, she couldn't redeem him, so it tamed up to a lightsaber battle between brother and sister, and in the end, because she couldn't redeem him, couldn't bring him back to the light, she ended up having to kill him. And I think that's going to be the same thing that's going to happen here. I feel like Rey or someone is going to have to just to stop, you know, Ren because of what he did with Han. That's the catalyst that says, like, if you can't stop and see what you've done, there's no redeeming you. I feel like it's going to be that point. It's like Han's death is what's going to be like, if you don't see what you did was wrong and you can't understand that, there is no redemption for you, and guess what? Now we're going to have to fight to the death, and that's what's going to happen.
I think if they do have a fight to the death, and it comes down to Rey having to kill Kylo, I could see her doing it, like, unwillingly. Because if she does it willingly, like, yeah, of course you deserve to die, I think that puts her a step towards the dark side.
But then, do we think the true balance in the Force would be a Jedi that embraces both light and dark?
Like a gray Jedi?
Yeah.
Right, but who's that? I mean, we don't have anybody who would fit that role.
Well, that's what I mean.
Currently.
Could it be Rey?
Well, and then also, then the other argument is this the end of the Skywalker storyline? Because you have to look at episodes 1 through 6, or 1 through 7. Well, 1 through 6 has been the Skywalker story, Anakin Skywalker, Luke Skywalker, and then now we don't really know whose story we're following. We're following Rey's story, but is she a Skywalker? Is she not? Mm-hmm. And this is where my argument that she's Luke's daughter. It's super obvious, and it's like, well, it can't be that obvious. Everyone says that, and I get that. But at the same time, if this is not a Skywalker story, or if it's a Solo story because we're following Ben Solo, or you know, Kylo Ren, you know, does this, if Kylo Ren dies, is that the end of the story that you're following? Which
maybe
is
it's
fine.
An Organa story, and we're following both of Leia's children.
But then what about 1, 2, and 3?
Well, because she's a Skywalker.
Yeah. She may have an adopted surname, but she's still
she's a
Skywalker.
So if Kylo is her son, obviously. If Rey's her daughter, because I had this thought, because Han and Rey have such a quick connection in The Force Awakens, that maybe Rey is his daughter, She's their second child. And that still makes it a Skywalker story all the way through.
No, I'll get that. You know, but I can't imagine them all seeing her and not making a connection. You know what I mean? Like, even
but just don't say anything. She has an instant connection with Leia, and she has an instant connection with Han. It's just that nobody says anything to the extent of, like, hey, you know that family who totally abandoned you on that desert planet with that awful guy? It's us.
But we've also seen how much you can manipulate someone's mind using the Force to protect her. What could someone have done to be able to manipulate a memory?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, there are other things that, like, you know, Kylo Ren seems to maybe know a little bit more. It's like, what girl? Like, really, like...
Right, exactly, exactly. And I'm Snoke convinced knows that a little she's bit more. Leia and Han's daughter.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. Like, and that's the weird part. Like, obviously, Han's death is going to play some type of role in episode 8 or 9 as a catalyst for a decision to be made by one of the other characters.
Most of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably most of them. It's also going to be held against, you know, Kylo Ren or Ben as like a, hey, you did this. Like, Chewie obviously went and shot him with a bowcaster. It was like, you know, so it's obviously like everyone holds him accountable for it. And it's going to be something that's going to haunt him going forward, you know, going something further on. You know, I don't know. We'll see how that kind of rolls out. But I do see it. I do like the, your message there. Do you want to say that? Jen, you can say
it. Ray, I am your brother. No!
That's impossible!
You know, did you guys hear about the leaked rumors and stuff like that? How she's Anakin reincarnated?
No, that's stupid.
Okay, so there's rumor. Okay, so this is like a spoiler that, you know, I was like, oh, this is part of the leaked story for episode 8, and it's like, Rey is really upset, like Luke, because she takes it that she's Luke's daughter, and she's really upset, and then he says no, like she's upset to him, and there's the line is something like Luke's like, no, you're my father.
Legitimately wrote that, they need to go and sit in a corner and think about what they've done.
Yeah.
So the whole point is he's like, no, you're my father. You know,
no,
you're the reincarnation of the chosen one who was Anakin Skywalker, my father before me, and blah 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 blah.
No.
You know, and, yeah. So that's one theory.
If that's what it turns out to be, I will be furious. You will see me storm out of a Star Wars movie.
You know, I kind of want that just for the crazy reaction you guys both just had. Of Luke saying, no, you're my father.
No, Mikey, no.
It what?
Because I haven't mentioned this, but like what I do for fun is write. And so as a writer, I'm offended.
Horribly offended. That's terrible. It's awful storytelling. Yeah. Like, that's worse than the prequels.
It is worse than the prequels. It's awful.
They didn't mention midichlorians or anything like that, so who knows? Yeah. Who knows?
No, it's terrible.
No, I reject that theory.
I reject the reality pile.
And substitute my own.
Yeah.
I keep it out of my trash pile.
Yeah, I recognize the council has made a decision.
Yes, exactly.
All right. Well, we've talked about Han from A New Hope all the way to Force Awakens. Is there anything we missed, guys?
Other than I love him, and it makes me sad that he's gone.
I know. It's Hansel. You know what? There is one thing we missed. Do we take, Tanya, maybe you can shed some light. Is Lego cartoons considered canon?
I don't think
they are, no, okay. Because they're kind of like a hyper-reality based on what we know from Star Wars, okay. So they're kind of, like, exaggerated.
Just
because
there was a Han Solo adventure, Lego one that took place during kind of the Clone Wars series, like when the Clone Wars series was on TV, and Han Solo knew Master Yoda, like he was at the Jedi Temple as the young kid. No one remembers that?
No.
He went by Ian because the H on his name tag fell off and he turned it sideways. So they called him Ian, not Han. No? Okay.
That sounds like a Lego thing.
It does sound like Lego. That's very true. No, I don't remember that.
So if you can Google that, I'm sure it's somewhere. I haven't seen it in years.
No, yeah, I don't think we can take that as being canon. That is as much canon as Matt the Radar Technician is canon.
Agreed.
Okay. Wait, Matt the Radar Technician is not real? But it, you
I
realize
didn't say he
it,
wasn't
like,
real. He's not canon.
I'm just saying, you realize it fits into canon. There's a whole reason the First Order did not see the Resistance coming flying in. Was because Matt the Radar Technician messed up the radar while playing with it or fixing it, if you will. And that's why the First Order didn't see the Resistance coming in.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I'm trying really hard. I'm sorry.
You are trying really hard. Like, works. That was a lot of stretching right there.
Are you sore Fine. From all that?
I'm pretty flexible, so it's okay. Anyway, thank you all for listening to another episode of Resistance Radio. As always, I'm Mikey B.
I'm Danya.
And I'm Jen.
Thank you all for listening, and we will see you next week.
Or after San Diego Comic-Con.